Good morning, everyone, and welcome. My name is Kate Singolani. I am the head of communications for our global supply chain and operations function at MilliporeSigma. MilliporeSigma is the life science business of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, and we are a proud sponsor of today's conference. I feel as if I've been growing up coming to this conference. Our business has sponsored this for the past 10 years, and we are fortunate to have been attending. And there's always a key takeaway that I bring with me every year, but one has really resonated and stuck with me. And it's, own your decisions, have no regrets. And with four kids, a demanding job, you can see that there are a lot of times you have to own your own decision and have no regrets and not live in this world of uncertainty. So today, my six-year-old daughter is literally taking the stage to sing at her holiday concert right now, same time. When she told me what the date was, I said, oh my gosh, I cannot go. There was a little bit of sadness, and I said, but we're going to be on the stage at the exact same time, so we are going to toast at night, and we're going to cheers to being on stage. So I promised her I would do a quick pick. Hold on. Okay, she's six. I know, this is about Charmaine, this is not about me. So, thank you for participating in today's breakout session, Communication, Speak Up, Stand Out. We have an amazing hour in store for you and an amazing guest speaker who will leave a lasting impression on you. I've only known her for maybe 3 days, and I already feel this connection with her. Imagine this, when People Magazine, Forbes, the London Times, or the New York Times want to feature the topic of leadership, they call you. This is true of our speaker, Charmaine McClary. Charmaine McClary is an author, a C-suite advisor, an executive coach who helps leaders have their best year ever. For more than two decades, 98% of Charmaine's clients are promoted within 18 months. She's on the faculty as a leadership and communications expert at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, and is a visiting lecturer at the Smith College Executive Education Program. I did want to close with reading some of the testimonials that can be found on her website from her customers. When I got the call to appear on the Oprah show, casual, I didn't panic. I was thrilled with Charmaine's guidance. I became a best-selling author and nationally known financial expert. Two, working with Charmaine raised my executive presence, and I know exactly what to do successfully, manage high stakes, thorny situations. Three, in a word, she is simply outstanding. And with that, I would like to welcome to the stage not only this amazing leader and woman, but quite the fashionista, Charmaine McClary.
Damn. Good morning. Good morning. All right, because we're going to rock and roll. You know what, Kate? You might need your glasses. I'm really thrilled and excited to be here today because we're going to have a conversation and a dialogue about what it means to be seen, heard, and recognized for what you do well so that it moves you forward and up, so that people of influence see your contribution to the organization so that you are not a well-kept secret. I want everyone to know about you. It will allow you to move from the invisible to the very visible. It means that you get to step into your spotlight and take your place. I think one of the things that you heard from Marion Heard earlier this morning was about defining yourself. And one of the things that you will be able to do more effectively when you leave here is to do just that. Because I am a believer that if you do not define yourself, others will, and their definition is inevitably inadequate. Inevitably inadequate. You have got to define yourself. What is your narrative? And the thing is that I'm going to share with you some skills, some tools, and some strategies that will ensure that you will not ever be invisible again, and that if it does happen, you'll know exactly what to do. And I guarantee you that. But I guarantee you with a caveat. And the caveat is that you will need to practice. Because many times we think that people are born this way. Well, all the ones I know are not. So Lady Gaga, that one doesn't work. It is through practice. The thing that we don't want to do, but it is practice because it is not an airborne disease. It does not come in through the air conditioning system. And it's not a pill that you take, because if there was, I would be on the south of France, sitting in my chaise lounge about right now, retired. It is practice. But the fun thing is that you're going to have an opportunity to do that in this room. Because how many of you have ever been to a Bobby Brown counter? Okay, did all of you come in here looking like this just from the beginning? I have to do a little something-something in the morning. But you've been to a makeup counter and you've said, I want you to make me look fabulous. And they tell you, absolutely, I will make you look fabulous. But what they forget to tell you is that you need to sleep on your back because you cannot replicate it the next day. The difference is that you are here today. When you walk out of this room, you will be able to put this into action immediately. Because I don't want you to have that Bobby Brown experience. I want you to leave with it in the muscle memory. Because it doesn't look quite as great the next day. But here you're going to have an opportunity to practice. And I want to share something with you, because this is something that I don't want to happen to you.
We have got to cut costs, people. Ideas?
We could open an account on FedEx.com, save 10% on online express shipping.
Okay, how about this? We open an account on FedEx.com, we save 10% on online express shipping.
That is wonderful. You just said the same thing I said, only you did this.
No, I did this.
Makes all the difference.
Bingo. That's good. Right on the nose.
Now, what I love about that is all the nervous laughter in the room. And the reason why there's nervous laughter is because all of us have been there, not seen, not heard, absolutely invisible. And you're thinking, did I just... I'm sorry, Did I say that? I want to make sure that you'll know exactly what to do. And I think that the... Am I back? Great. I want to make sure that, again, with practice, that you know exactly what to do so that you don't feel that again. And there's something... a story I want to tell you as I began, and it's a story about one of my clients. I want you to imagine it's a fall day, it's drizzly outside, and I get a call from one of my favorite clients, and she says to me, Charmaine, I have been asked to become the CEO of an iconic publicly traded company. Now, when she says this, we both do a happy dance, because I am so excited and so thrilled for her. She says, but there's a caveat. She says, the caveat is that the stock is in the toilet. No, that was her description, not mine, is in the toilet. And I said, so that ain't nothing but a thing. Don't worry about it. She says, but I think I'm going to take it. I said, great. I said, so you'll be a CEO of an iconically public traded company with the stock in the toilet, but it won't be there for very long. And I began my work with her like I began with all my clients, all my successful clients. I asked her, I said, what do you want as an outcome when we do this work together? And she said, Charmaine, what I want to make sure is that I'm seen and heard. I'm seen by the street. I'm seen by my executive team and by the employees at the company. She said, I want to make sure that it's not about me, but I want to make sure that I make a difference in the company, a positive difference in this organization. So as I said, I began my work with her like I do all my clients. And the question I ask her again, what does she want as an outcome? The next question I ask her is, how does she see herself? And the second question I ask her is, how do other people see you? And the third question, which is the most powerful question, is, how do you want people to see you? What would be the adjectives that they would use to describe you? Because that is how I want you to show up on your first day of school. The first day that you walk into the company, I want that to be what they see, what they feel, and how you sound. Now, my client is 6 feet tall, so she takes up space. She's got presence. But when she is nervous, her presence seems to shrink. Her voice begins to quiver. And so I said, so when you describe how you want to be seen as being powerful, as being engaging, approachable, and a person has positive attitude and that is very results-driven, what does it look like? And I had her do a lot of mirror work. And mirror work is like, you know, you're practicing in front of a mirror about how you want to stand, how you want to use your body, how you want to use your voice, and what language do you want to use. I call it the language of leaders.
Now, I'm happy to say for this client is that she really did embody this, and her first day, everyone was able to see the standard of excellence that she was expecting and what she was going to deliver and how she was going to bring that to the table. And I am happy to say that that client became the number one CEO by Inc. magazine. Their stock went up 416%. 416%, so I ain't playing. I take zero prisoners. And what was so different about her leadership style is because she believes in servant leadership, truly does. So she was heard by her executive team. She was heard by the employees. She was heard by her franchisees. And she was heard by the street. They heard her loud and clear because 416% increase in the stock price, that's being big, bad, and bold. But she embodied that in every way in which she carried herself, which is what's so important. Really did embody that message. She allowed herself to be very visible. And part of being powerful and part of using the word power, it's about grace. It's really about standing again in your place and really allowing people to look at you, to see you, and to hear you. Because if you do not want to be seen, this is not the room for you. If you do not want to see yourself differently, this is not the room for you. Because you are going to walk out of the room different. I had a client just recently, and before we began working together, he told me his story. And then when we were embarking on our work, he said, well, let me just tell you my story. I said, Todd, I've heard your story five times. I can repeat a chapter and verse. I said, Todd, if you do not want to make a change, I'm not the coach for you. I said, I will cash your check, but we were not working together. I said, so if you want to have a change, we're going to work together. And I'm happy to say he has doubled his salary and was able to acquire the position that he wanted because he was willing to do the things that allowed him to be different, to show up differently. And one of the things that he did is he leveraged a process that I use called Executive Success Principles. And about 20-some-odd years ago, I interviewed CEOs and senior-level executives of Fortune 500 companies, and I asked them, why were they more successful than other people? And they all said, Charmaine, it's not because I'm smarter than other people. It's because of how I leverage the information that I bring to the table, how I leverage that value proposition. That is what is different. It's how you communicate that. And one of the people that was in the room was a CEO when I was introducing this. And one of the things that he said, this is exactly what my team needs. He said, because I don't want them to tell me how the watch is made. I want them to tell me what the benefit is of that watch. And many times what we do is we share with people all of the task, but not the outcome, not the vision, because leaders communicate the vision. They speak in headlines. They have three must-make points, and I'm going to go into each one of these in detail. They create witnesses, and they don't audition for the part, and they embody their message. When you communicate the vision, when you have a vision, you can engage people. When you engage people, you can influence them. When you influence them, you can create community, and when you create community, you can create transformation. Now, how many of you watch the news at all? Yes. And what happens is they tell you this fabulous story is coming first thing. Is that right? Yes. And when do you actually hear that story? At the end. But they've captured your attention. They have seduced your eye and your ear. They said, man eaten by alligator. And what you find out is actually it was a little lizard, a gecko on top of it. But they captured your attention because they articulated the vision. How many of you have children? Yes. How many of your children would be really excited about going to Disney World? I don't have stock, but okay, good. When you communicate, if you were to communicate the vision to your children and say, you know what, we're going to go on vacation, and we're going on vacation to Disney World, you will have the best behaved children for 2 weeks. They will do everything that you say. Because you are communicating the vision. That is the outcome. That is what will happen if you get their cooperation. But if you were to begin that by saying to them, what we're going to do is we're going to get in the station wagon or the SUV, and we're going to drive to the corner, and then we're going to go and get gas. And then we're going to get on the highway, and yes, you can bring your dog with you, and then we're just going to kind of meander down the road and, you know, kind of see what's fun. You will have misbehaving children for the 2 weeks and during that trip because you did not communicate the vision. And communicating the vision is what makes the difference. That's what allows people to stop and to listen to what it is that you have to say. That's how you can engage people, is by communicating the vision. If you're going to initiate a project or an initiative in your organization, what does that mean to people when you go to them? I want you to do more work. I want you to do more work. Now, how many people are going to say yes to you on that one? No, they aren't. But if you communicate the vision about what that outcome is, where is this going to take the organization? How are we going to take the hill? And why? That's communicating the vision. And what's going to be great is that in a few moments, you're going to have an opportunity to create your narrative and your value proposition about what it is that you do. Communicating the vision. So, for example, when people ask me, what do I do? You think the first thing out of my mouth is I tell them I'm an executive coach? No, and the reason why is because they may have had an article yesterday in the New York Times that said that all executive coaches suck. That means somebody else defined me, right? But if I'm on an airplane and someone asks, what do I say to them? I say, I help smart people get promoted and communicate the big picture. I provide executive coaching to CEOs of iconic companies. Now, I did that all in one sentence. So who do I work with? Smart people. They're dumb. I am so not interested. I only want the smart folks. And when I work with them, what happens? They get promoted. And why do they get promoted? Because they communicate the big picture. I did all of that in one sentence. Articulated my value. The value is what I created. Because executive coach, that doesn't mean very much. Because it really all depends on what your perspective is about an executive coach. That is important. In fact, the other part of that is speaking in headlines, making sure you capture the attention. Now, Michelle Obama has definitely spoken in headlines. Speaking in headlines, I have a client. This is a true story, and it's hilarious to me. So when we began working together, I asked her, what are the three things you like as an outcome? She said, there are three things that I want, Charmaine. One is that I want to get a PhD. She said, second, I want to run a leadership institute. And the third is I want to be on the corporate jet a year from now wearing a big floppy hat going to the Kentucky Derby with the CEO of my company and the CEO of my client. I said, okay, I have a haberdashery for you if you'd like. And I said, can't get the PhD for you, but you will run a leadership institute. Now, this was a Wednesday when we met. And I asked her, I said, what do you do? She said, I'm senior director of sales and marketing. I said, that is so wonderful. I said, so what do you do? She says, I'm senior director of sales and marketing. I said, oh, that is so fabulous. I said, so what do you do? She said, I already told you. She said, I'm senior director of sales and marketing. I said, how many employees are there here? She said, oh, about 49,000. I said, hell, there are a whole lot of senior directors in this organization. I said, so if I'm the CEO of the company and you come to me and you tell me that you are senior director of sales and marketing, what does that mean to me? That you're what, one of 1,500 or one of 10,000 if there are 49,000 people that are employed by the company? She said, but that is what I do. I said, no. That is the title of what you do. And a lot of people have that title, but you did not articulate your value proposition. So I was asking her some questions about what it is that she does. And so what we found out is actually she was responsible for the fastest growing market segment of her company. Do you hear me? The fastest growing market segment of the business. And here she is talking about senior director of sales and marketing. Now, this is what happened. She's at the elevator bank of her company. A gentleman walks out and he's looking for the CFO. He's lost. She tells him exactly where he is. He asks her, so what is it that you do? She says, I lead the fastest growing market segment of our organization. Are you familiar with so-and-so client? He says, oh my God, I've heard about that campaign. Now, this is the thing that's so important. He invited her to a reception for the next evening. And in that reception, you had to be vice president and above in order to attend. Now, if she had said, I'm senior director of sales and marketing, do you think she would have gone to that reception? No, she'd still be by the elevator bank going, would you like to have floor number one, number two, or number three? That's what she would be doing. She runs the Leadership Institute for a Fortune 50 company. She does have her PhD, and a year later, she was wearing the hellified big floppy hat to the Kentucky Derby with her client and with her CEO on the corporate jet. Why? Because she shifted her narrative about what it is that she does. She articulated the value, not the task. She articulated the vision. She spoke in headlines about what it is that she does. How many of you are in HR here in this room? Okay, only just a few of you like raising up your hand. So one of the reasons why I talk about, I'm going to say about HR, is that many times people will tell me in HR, you know, I'm really not responsible for money. Anybody that's not responsible for money is unemployed. Absolutely unemployed, because they are not writing out checks just for the hell of it. I can guarantee you that, because if they are, I want one. But articulating your value proposition, and in just a few moments, you're going to have an opportunity to do that, because you want to communicate the vision about whatever, if you're working on a project, you're working on an initiative, you want to articulate that. If you are speaking about what it is that you do, if you're at a conference, instead of telling somebody that you are the senior manager or a project leader, what does a project leader mean? I was just at a company, and there were about seven people in the room that were project managers. I go, what does that mean? They said, well, you know, we manage a project. I said, well, I have my closet. You can come manage that if you want and straighten that out. I mean, I got a lot of projects you can manage. But what does that mean? What is the value? So when I return to my office and my office manager, my office manager tells me what I've done is I've done a lot of filing for you, Charmaine, I am so not interested in that. What is the outcome? If she says what I've done is I've reorganized our filing system so that it makes it easier for us to be customer-centric, to get information, that's the value. Because taking paper from file A to putting in file B, hell, I can hire a monkey to do that. I want to know what is, again, the value proposition. That's what's really important. And so you really want to think about what are the three must-make points. I always say the three questions that every audience has. Why should I listen? What's in it for me? And what do you want me to do about it? Now, when I started, I told you what's in it for you. You will see yourself differently, and other people will see you differently. You have the potential to elevate where you are in your organization and get promoted because you're in this room. And what do I want you to do about it? I said, I want you to practice. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to practice in just a moment. Because when you all leave here, I want you to shift how you see yourself. My client that used to say she was senior director of sales and marketing, she shifted the perception about how she sees herself and how other people see her. When we allow other people to define us, that is a very limited view. It really does mean not asking for permission and showing up big, bad, and bold. I believe that you said, Kate, was about, there were two takeaways you had, and one was about accepting was it accepting responsibility and no regrets? Are those the two?
Owning your decision.
It is your decision, and you're going to say, as they would say as a child, you're going to either get in trouble or not, regardless. So you might as well claim it and say exactly what it is, because that is what makes the difference. So the three must make points. This client, she'd forgotten who her audience was. A client who just had a baby, and she was wearing dirndl skirts. And for those of you who don't know what dirndl skirts are, they're just simply ugly. And so she looked really frumpy. And she was a part of this leadership development program, but she didn't get promoted. But really everyone else did, and she was really in major pissosity. And so I asked her, I said, why weren't you promoted? She said, I don't know. I said, okay, if someone tells you you didn't get what you wanted, you have got to always ask the question, why? She said, well, okay. I said, ask your CEO. So she does. And you know what he says to her? He says, you weren't strategic. You're not very strategic. Now, she had just completed a program at Northwestern for her MBA. And she was probably smarter than everybody in the room. But there was a perception issue, and also she did not use the language of leaders. And that dirndl skirt, that kept getting in the way. So this is what she did. Really simple, but very impactful. Again, she thought about her audience. So the word that she would always use to describe something, it was her fallback word, was passionate. I am so passionate about this. I am so passionate about that. I said, now, if you look at your manager, if his wife said the word passionate, he might run. So you know what he's thinking when you say the word passionate. I said, that's like the turnoff word, forgetting who your audience is, shifting how you think about what it is that you're going to say so that you are heard. So what did she begin to do? She began to change, again, how she spoke. She said, you know, based on my observation and my experience, if we look at the strategy, if we're going to be really strategic about how we move forward in this organization, there are three things we need to think about. So she changed her language. She simply incorporated the word strategic. She removed passionate from her vocabulary. And when she spoke, she really did capture their attention. She is now the general manager for North America, Canada, and Mexico. Why? Again, she shifted how she spoke about what she does and what her insights were. If someone would say, well, you know, that's probably not going to work, based on my observation and my experience and the data, these are the results. So that way, she was creating some mutual accountability. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you this one video, and then I'm going to have you craft your narrative about what it is that you do. Are you guys excited about that? Okay, because I'm excited for you. Now, I want you to listen to this person, Jamie, who you're going to meet. And I love Jamie. Love him.
I want to thank you guys for coming out.
Oh, Jamie, why don't you tell us what's new in IT?
Gotta keep it short.
Oh, well, we just implemented DFS and a new SAN. And also, we enabled shadow copy for shared folders on our file servers. It enables users to get back lost documents on their own without calling IT. And it'll save us hundreds of thousands of dollars, which...
It'll do what?
With new Windows Server 2003, you can do more with less.
Automated system recovery.
Okay, clearly I'm a technological laggard. That's from 2003. But I love Jamie. Now, what did Jamie do before the end of that commercial? He changed how he spoke about what it is that he does. Because before it was all gobbledygook, unless you're really into technology. And I know that many of you in this room are. Thank goodness for you, because I really need you. But he shifted how he spoke about what it is that he does. What he said is that if you want to retrieve documents, we should save hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now that would probably be millions. But he shifted that because that was the important value proposition. And I also like Jamie, and there's something that Jamie could have done in terms of creating witnesses. But let's go with Jamie on this. And so what I want to have each of you do is I want you to do it solo first, and then I'm going to have you get a partner. I want you to write your value proposition about what it is that you do. And you cannot use your title. Is this important to you? Let me ask you that. Are you enjoying this?
Yes.
Great. So you have all of 3.5 minutes because you're so brilliant. Ten. Perfect. Ooh. I'm on time. And for any of you who are not writing or typing, it means that you are so brilliant you got this down and you don't have to even worry about it. If you don't want to do it with your job title, think about the initiative or project that you're leading currently and how would you articulate that to someone. How would you get them to provide you with resources, money, people? So if you just go in and say, I want to change the department, you're likely not going to get any money or resources to do that. But if you tell them what the value is, remember, why should they listen, what's in it for them, and what do you want them to do about it? What do you do?
I'm a
You're a student? What's your subject?
Biology.
And what do you want to do when you get out of school?
Going to medical school.
Oh, you're going to go to medical school. Okay, so you're going to write a value proposition about what it means to be a doctor.
Yeah.
And what is your name?
Amanda.
Amanda, and I'm going to come back to you, Amanda. Okay, so I have a timekeeper. How many more minutes do we have? No, for the exercise. I'm really bad at counting on time. I like dollars, but I'm not good at, like, time. You have another 60 seconds. How about that? I get to make a decision, executive decision. So you've got 60 seconds. And for those of you who have your hand up here like, ooh, my goodness, I really hope she doesn't call on me, I will call on you. Okay. So who wants to volunteer? Oh, in the back. Actually, I'm going to call on you first because you haven't read. Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Would you please stand? What is your name?
Sarah Toomey.
Hi, Sarah Toomey. Okay, so what is it that you do, Sarah?
I analyze our organization's risk so that we can efficiently deploy capital to grow the business.
Okay, so you analyze the risk so the company can
deploy capital to grow the business.
Okay. And so where does the company want to be ultimately?
We want to be the number one animal health business in the world.
Okay, you want to be the number one animal health business in the world. So if you are the number one animal health business in the world, what happens for the people that consume your product, or should say for the people that buy your product?
Their pets are healthier, live longer lives, and give them joy.
Okay. So all of that can be leveraged at different times. So what I'd like for you to do is, you said that, can I see what you wrote?
Absolutely.
Okay, short-term memory.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so that we can efficiently deploy capital to grow the business. Okay, so you're going to deploy capital to grow the business. But so what I want you to do is, I want you to flip this, because at the end, what you want is to ensure that every pet owner does blah, 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 and we are able to deliver that for them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Do you guys get that? Okay, so do you want to say it again, Sarah?
The new and revised.
So yes.
We want to ensure every pet owner has joy, and we do that by deploying our capital.
So what kind of products do you have?
Everything that veterinary clinics need to service the pets. So disposable gloves, diagnostic equipment, antibiotics.
Okay, and there are a lot of pet lovers in this room. So what I do is, so if you're talking to somebody just a one-on-one, what I do is I ensure that your pet has, is the healthiest it can possibly be. And how we do that is by ensuring that blah, 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 blah. That's one of the ways that you can say that. Okay, Sarah? Thank you. Thank you for standing up. Who else wants to volunteer? Yes, plaid jacket. You, plaid jacket, yes. Dark hair, dramatic look. Okay, I like that. What I wanted to do is, what's the ultimate? So will you make a lot of money for your clients? That's what you gave at the end. I want to have that toward the front. And why do I want to have that toward the front? Is because we're a clicker society. What do we do? Is how many channels are there? Actually, not even channels, cable, you know, like this, over 400 stations. My husband stops when it sounds good and it looks good. So what you want to do is make people stop quickly. So what happens when your clients are successful? So what I want you to do is flip it. Your end is going to be your front. Do you guys understand that? And why does the end need to be at the front?
It's the value
proposition. Absolutely. Don't wait until the end to give the punchline. Give the punchline up front. This is the one time you can be funny from the very beginning. Thank you so very much. Anyone else? Yes.
I write and update documentation that enables the military to work.
You can do whatever you want.
Thank you. I write and update documentation for multi-million-dollar radars that enables the military to work safely.
Okay, that's a long one. I'd have to do CPR in between that. So what I want to ask you is that how is my life better because of what you do?
To protect the country. Let's see. So I write an update documentation on multimillion-dollar radars that helps protect the country.
I ensure that. What kind of radar is it?
The radar. They're naval radar, but they're.
I wouldn't know the difference. Okay. You'll say. So I'm going to make something up. I ensure that our country is safe because I identify the best blah blah. What are they?
Radar
available for this country. Because actually, the first part that you used, which is what did you say? You write.
I update documentation.
Okay, who updates documentation? You might do that. That's the task. That's not the outcome. Does that make sense? Okay. I have a couple of other people. In fact, there's a Charmaine that wants to volunteer. Only other Charmaine in the room. And actually, I like you, Charmaine. What I'm going to ask you to do now is I'm going to ask you to do a diet. I want to ask you to work with the person to your right. And I want you to share with them what your value proposition is. And I want you guys to critique each other's value. Okay, before you start, before you get extremely rowdy, give me just 1 second. Before you start, what I'm going to ask you to do is that you each get 2 minutes. So it's a total of 4 minutes. If I can have a timekeeper, when 2 minutes is up, let me know and I will stop you. And I want you to give really critical feedback because you want to leave here empowered. Go. So what do you do?
I'm responsible for executing a global strategy to help mitigate the risk of cross-contamination in patients receiving endoscopic procedures.
Patients who are receiving what?
Endoscopic procedures. Colonoscopies.
I just had surgery, so I know. I want you to flip that because you gave me all the things that you do up until the thing happens.
So, let's see. Patients receiving endoscopic procedures. So I help mitigate the risk of cross-contamination in patients with endoscopy.
So let me ask you this. If you didn't do what you did, what percentage of the patients would be at risk? And so how many patients are healthier because you do what you do? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So X amount of patients less patients are at risk due to execution.
Okay, so let me just... So what if you had 400
before
that were dying because of this?
Yep.
And you've reduced that now by 75%.
Right.
So what you're going to tell me is that we have a 75% reduction in deaths
due to mitigating cross-contamination. Gotcha. Thank you.
Or the dollars related to it.
Right.
Okay. Because now, if you think
now
about
the
loss, let's say you guys had $25 million in lawsuits. Well, you don't any longer because of this. So that now goes to the bottom line. Does that make sense? Okay, got it. So what do you do?
I'm similar. I manage one of the largest and fastest growing franchise in the endoscopy division that saves patients' lives every day. So then I listened to you, I flipped it. I did something like Boston Scientific's Division for Patient Care Outcomes. And then it was like because of my franchise is how I was. So it's similar to hers because my
yes. And then what you can also do is because you have the franchise, how much is the franchise worth? How much has the franchise increased? Okay. I may call on you too. You're sitting.
I know.
Okay, switch. If you would switch, please.
At 10:45, do you want to go to Q&A? Or do you want to hold?
10:45.
What
time? Oh, 6 minutes? Oh. I need a little bit longer.
Q&A?
No, let's go to 1050. If I may have your attention, please. Should I start scripting? Hello! Good morning. All right. Woo! I'm exhausted. You guys are rowdy. Okay. All right, great. How was the exercise? Helpful? Great. Excellent. There were two people over here on my right who were speaking about what they do, and they're in the endoscopic field. And if you can, yes. Yes, please. So, what do you do?
So, 5% of patients are at risk. 5% of patients receiving endoscopic procedures are at risk of cross-contamination. And I work with the team to execute strategies to reduce that risk to zero.
Okay, so that is a value proposition, yes. Now, what did you say before?
I am responsible for executing a global strategy to help mitigate the risk of endoscopic procedures.
I'm already dead. It was. I was a goner getting on the table. So, but you see the shift. How many of you know how much money you're responsible for? Everybody should know how much money you're responsible for. Because if you're losing money, you need to know that. If you're growing the business, you need to know that. But you can't say how much you're growing the business if you don't know how much business that you have. So, I want everyone to leave here knowing how much money you are responsible for. So you are affecting the bottom line. And we only have 10 minutes, so we've got to get going. Remember we saw Jamie? And one of the things that Jamie did is Jamie spoke about what he did, but he didn't create witnesses. And I want you to be able to create witnesses. Because as I say, is that creating witnesses is about ensuring that you have advocates, people to speak on your behalf that are willing to use their political capital. Because like the proverbial, is the tree falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? Anyone but you. So does anyone see what you do other than you? Because hard work without a witness is simply hard work, and who the hell needs that? No one knows whether you've done it with strategy, with vision, with passion. So you, and my other client can't even use the word passion, but no one knows. And it's not about you being a braggart, but it means that you have people speaking on your behalf when you are not in the room, and you help prepare them on how to speak about you because they know what it is that you do because you are speaking about your value proposition. You prep them in the way in which you speak every single day so that they can seamlessly speak on your behalf. Because when they go into performance reviews, you need all the advocates you can have in that room. You want people speaking about you. So creating witnesses. And for Jamie, one of the ways that he could have created witnesses is after everybody was sitting around listening to him, is what? What could he have done? Send out an email. It was a pleasure meeting everyone in marketing. And if you ever have any difficulty retrieving your documents on your own, here are three simple steps in which to do that. If you ever have a question regarding IT, give me a phone call. Because right now we all think that he is the IT guru. Because of how he communicated about what he did. But he had to shift that. Creating witnesses. You leave a meeting, and it's like the very first commercial where the guy, one person spoke, the other one took over. You can send an email that says, here are three recommendations based on how we're going to move forward. Because it was your idea to begin with, and the likelihood is you already have already done the research. You know what comes next. You can then recapture the attention. You can recapture your place. The next, as I say, don't audition for the part. Stop auditioning for parts that you already have. Your company is paying you big bucks to do what it is that you do. So stop going in the room and asking for permission. Because leaders don't ask for permission. Don't say, I think I have an idea. If you think you have an idea, hell, just be quiet. If you have an idea, then you say that. But don't audition for the part. The other thing is, so my husband, I love him, and he was an only child, and his parents adored him. Adored him. This is one of the things that my husband does, and I didn't realize it for the first, probably 7 months. He walks in the room, honey, I have an idea. It is absolutely brilliant. It is astonishing. You cannot wait to hear this. I'm thinking, buddy, I'm glad your parents love you, but I don't know if I want to hear it. And I said to him, I said, Pat, do you know that you set the stage for how you want me to receive information? He goes, no, I don't. I don't do that. The true story. Comes back in the room 45 minutes later. Oh, my God. Honey, this. He's a composer. This is brilliant. They are going to love this. No one has ever done this before. Now, I ain't mad at him. He's setting the stage for how he wants me to receive the information. And part of that is about not auditioning for the part. If you have an idea, an insight, you bring that to the table. And I always say the meeting that you need to attend is a meeting that cannot take place without your brilliance or your insight. If it can take place without that, then you don't need to go. That's somebody else's meeting. But if you're going, you've got insight. Share that insight and set the stage. You're in a meeting and people are talking over you. I had a client. Everybody was talking over him all the time. He thought he was being really assertive. He was not. I was videotaping him. Remember, I'm technologically illiterate. I forgot to turn on the button for sound. So all there was his body language. But it was really powerful. Why? Because he saw his body language. His body language was like this. It was so timid. And this is a meeting where people like curse each other out. He changed where he sat. He sat next to the CEO. What he did is he would pre-sell the idea to the CEO or whoever he needed to have as an advocate before he got in the room. When he stood up to speak, he would do just that. He would stand up to speak. If you're in the room and people are talking and they're not paying attention, stand up. Excuse me. I need your undivided attention. This is important. You don't want to miss this. This is invaluable. Begin to practice it because it seems really foreign for you right now. Practice it. And the very next thing is embodying your message, making sure you're walking, talking, and acting the part. That you are doing what I call a statement speak. No more than three sentences to get there. If it takes more than that, you need to stop. If you see a child running in the street in front of a vehicle, what you would do is say, stop, don't go. That statement speak. Then you can say, when your child comes back, Stephen, it's really important that you not run in oncoming traffic. It's really quite dangerous. But you don't give him that dissertation when he's running in front of the street. You stop him right dead in his tracks. Come back. That's what you want to think about at work, is that when you are speaking, you're speaking to be heard. You're speaking to be seen because, I say, hard work without a witness is simply, who the hell needs that? But also, hard work without the recognition and the promotion or the raise, I know you're not doing this just because it's like your habit to get up and go to work in the morning. You do it either because you enjoy it, because I always say that you're spending more than 8 hours a day at work, or you're doing it because you want to make a contribution, but you're also doing it so that you can be recognized for that. And when someone offers you a role, let me just say this. When someone offers you a role, let me just say this part here, is that for many times, particularly for women, we say yes before they have told us how much money they're going to offer us, yes before we find out what the level of responsibility is, yes before we identify what the resources are that you need. You want to think about it. And you want to have an idea in mind about how much money you want. Because do not leave money on the table. That one drives me crazy. Will make me shave my head. Do not leave money on the table. And we're willing to say yes because we're so excited about being invited to the club. We go, oh my gosh, I'm just so happy to have that. Oh my God, yes, I said yes. You said yes to what? Yes to double the staff. You won't have an assistant. Yes because you're only getting a 2% raise. I don't want to say yes to that. Bring my ducats. I want my money. I want the level of responsibility. I want the resources necessary to set me up so that I can be really, really successful. That's what you want. That's what I want. I want to accept this role because that's what it's going to take us. If this information was important to you, I'm going to have you text something in just a moment, but I want you to hear this. Because for women, this is powerful.
I guess let's start with Stacy. Stacy, what do you do for a living?
I'm a corporate attorney.
Great. And I know you've been on a job hunt. How's that going for you?
Well, I've been interviewing for about 10 months.
And why do you think that is?
Because I sound like a sexy baby.
Which, baby grape for the bedroom?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. But am I really going to hire a sexy baby to defend me in a patent infringement lawsuit? Okay, so over the next 6 weeks, Lewis will be recording your voices, and we will listen to your sounds evolve right before your very ears. Because women should sound like women, not
baby dolls who end everything in a question.
Let's make a statement. Now, who's ready to be heard? I guess let's...
I want you to be ready to be heard. And if this information that I've provided has been helpful to you, I want you to text the word HEARD to 69922. There you'll have bonus information that will set you up so you can drop the mic the next time you speak, whether it's a one-on-one conversation or if it's a group of 500 or 1,000, that you'll be prepared to really step into your spotlight to take your place, your rightful place. Because when you leave here today, again, I want you to leave here with school, with tools, strategies, so that you are seen, that you are heard, that you are very visible. Again, you're taking your place. Thank you.
I don't even think I'm shaking anymore. I was like this earlier, taking a picture. I'm like, let's go. All right. Unbelievable. Can we just have another round of applause for Charmaine? We are going to, I believe we have 7 minutes. We are going to go to Q&A. So we have microphones in the aisle, so I would ask that everybody comes up front, speak loudly, speak clearly, so everybody can hear your questions, and we will have Charmaine for the next couple of minutes. Immediately following this session, she'll be down in the exhibit hall, so you can talk to her about her audiobook and how you can download that. So let's just jump right into Q&A. And if you could just take the microphone, yes.
You had mentioned not leaving money on the table. Two or three tips or highlights on that topic.
How much is the market bearing for that role? What is the value that you add? And you also want to find out, because part of that money is not just the dollars, but also what are the benefits that are involved and how many people do you need to have report to you so that you can be successful? What resources do you need so that you can be successful? Because that's dollars as well. But you want to have all of that. So do your research. When you have seen successful organizations do X work, how many people report them? How much money are they responsible for? What is the budget? You need to know all of that because you may be saying yes to failure. And I want you to say yes to success. Anyone else? Okay, now you all got quiet and you were like loud as all get out. Okay, if anybody wants to speak to me one-on-one, I'm happy to do that after this session. Unless somebody else has a question, yes. If you can come up to the mic, please. Because I want everybody to see you and hear you.
Sorry, up front you spoke about how we want to be seen.
Yes.
And how we are seen. What's the most effective way to understand how we are seen?
You ask people. You identify people, and I would say at least six people, and ask them. And ask them for the feedback, and don't say anything to them other than thank you. The other thing to do is make sure those people are going to give you real honest feedback, and you let them know that that is exactly what you want. You also say to them, I'm committed to making a shift in terms of how I show up, and you can be a part of that. Because people don't look for things until it either looks really good or looks really bad. That way they become your partner in your success. So your biggest critic, you say to your biggest critic, they say, well, if you were, you know, if you didn't do blah, 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 what is the one thing I can do to shift how you see me and how you hear me?
Thank you.
Doesn't mean redefining yourself. It means figuring out what does success look like. And you decide if you want to do that. I always say, know what your outcome is that you want, and then what are the experiences that you need in your life in order for you to achieve that? Anyone else? Yes.
Hi, Charmaine. Thank you for the talk today. Really enjoyed it. What I took away from today's session is creating witnesses. There are many times when I feel as though I don't want anyone representing me in the organization because I don't feel that they can represent me well. But based on your talk today, I have to shift how I speak in a room and the information that I provide so I can create witnesses, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. And so you do. And one of the things you want to do is keep a black book. A black book is like every day that you do something that's really fabulous, you write that down. Because on the day when you're feeling your worst, you need to, one, go and look at it, and two, when you have your performance review. If you go in your performance review and you've never had a conversation with your boss, it is too damn late. You want to be able to say all of the things that you have done, and what does that mean in terms of the vision at the end? Like, what has happened positively for the organization because of your contribution? And so you can equip people with the language that they need to use to speak about you. Anyone else?